of William Penn, The Life and Work. So we just wanted to start just by some of by just mentioning some of his quotes and ideas. He was a very interesting man. And one of the things he says is, believe nothing against another, but upon good authority, nor report what may hurt another unless it be a greater hurt to others to conceal it. And it's old English, but if you can break it down, it definitely has a theosophical bent to it. Where thou art obliged to speak, be sure to speak the truth, for equivocation in halfway to lying is halfway to lying, as lying the whole way to hell. And the last, and we'll read some more of these at the end of the meeting, but then just one more. Man being made a reasonable and so a thinking creature, there is nothing more worthy of his being than the right direction and employment of his thoughts. Since upon this depends upon his usefulness to the public and his own present and future benefit in all respects. And Theosophy does talk about the soul in man, and that we're thinking beings. So the first half of this class will be a biography of William Penn, and then my partner will go into more of his thinking and how he came about to come up with a lot of his ideas. So William Penn was one of the leading proponents of religious freedom in 17th century England, and he really paid dearly for it. He was repeatedly imprisoned, but he did help to preserve greatly the persecuted Quaker religion that still survives today. Penn's new government originated the principles of a representative government, and also, which we find very interesting, is that he put forth the idea of a separation of church and state and the elimination of nobility and ranks. He came up with a constitution concept such as an elected two-house Congress, religious freedom, freedom of speech, and a Bill of Rights. And he also, in 1693, he drafted a lengthy proposal for a future European Union, or as he called it, a European League or a Confederacy. He was born October 14, 1644. He was the eldest son of Admiral Sir William Penn, who was at that time was a famous he was a famous admiral, and his mother's name was Margaret Jasper. They had three children. His father, the admiral, was renowned for his naval victories for the crown during the mid-17th century, and especially with the wars with the Dutch. And he was knighted by King Charles for his service in the Navy. But one thing that was rather difficult for the admiral was the fact that because of the wars, England was decimating its own economic coffers. So the admiral actually put forth quite a bit of money in order to keep the armed forces going in England. And it says that he lent the crown £16,000 to fund the navy. And they never paid him back. But as we will see, because they didn't pay him back, this was one of the ways that his son, William Penn, was able to accumulate a lot of the land that he did. England ultimately ended up controlling considerable land in America, the New World, as a result of its successful war against the Dutch. At age 11, Penn attended an academy called Chigwell, and this was in England. And then in 1656, the family did move to Ireland, where he received private tutoring. Now, this should give an idea to us about the personality of William Penn. At age of 17, William Penn was expelled from Oxford University for criticizing the elaborate ceremonies of the Anglican Church, protesting against required chapel attendance, and because he visited a professor who had been dismissed for teaching tolerant humanism. So life was pretty strict back then if you weren't Anglican. So following this, his parents sent him to France and enrolled him in what was called the Protestant University, and then L'Académie Protestant, we can't pronounce French,
Protestants.
where he studied with Christian humanist Moise Amiral, a supporter of religious tolerance. So this was in France, and at nearing his 20th birthday, Penn went back to England. And he attended a college. It was called Lincoln's Inn, which at the time was the most prestigious law school in London. So, around that time, Penn's father, the Admiral, who, as we said, was assigned to rebuild the Royal Navy, he asked the king if William could be his personal assistant, and also a not only his assistant, but also a courier. So they said yes, and at this point he becomes very good friends with King Charles, and also his brother James, the Duke of York. So we'll look now at how William Penn was the relationship he had in regards to the Quakers. The Quakers were founded in 1647 by George Fox, and they believed that all people were equal before God and emphasized a direct relationship with their creator. They believed that they were guided by an inner light they called this the Holy Spirit, opposed restriction of individual conscience, and had simple, unadorned church services without ministers, sacraments, or liturgy. They refused to swear any kind of loyalty oath to the king. They refused to pay any tithes to the Anglican Church, and they were pacifists. They refused to bear any arms. In Anglican England, they were viewed as heretics, and they were subject to arrest, persecution, and imprisonment. In 1667, William Penn was introduced to a Quaker missionary, Thomas Lowe, and it is said that he underwent an experience similar to the Apostle Paul, claiming, quote, "The Lord visited me, gave me divine impressions of himself." Afterwards, he had started attending Quaker meetings, and that's when the Quakers became the Society of Friends. And even though it was a crime in Anglican England at this time for that, in September of 1667, the police broke into one of the meetings, arrested everybody, even Penn. But because Penn was dressed, as a rich person back in the day would, they wanted to let him go. But he said no. He refused to be released. So he had himself jailed, and he insisted that he be treated the same as his new friends. So he began preparing a legal defense and began writing about the freedom of conscience. At this point, his father disowns him when he refused to leave the Quakers. So he ended up living with a few Quaker friends when he was not in prison, because during this time, he refused to give up his belief in the friends, so he lived in a number of Quaker households. So this definitely shocked the high society of England at the time, because the Penns were considered to be very, they were considered to be high society. So the Quakers were intensely persecuted at this time, and but for whatever reason, in the King's Court, they trusted him. In 1668, while staying with a Quaker family, Isaac Pennington, Penn was introduced to Pennington's stepdaughter. Her name was Julie L. Ma, and they fell in love immediately, and they were wed. She would bear 8 children, but only 3 of them would live. And she passed away in 1694, and Penn remarried shortly thereafter, actually, to Anna Callowhill. And of course, those of us that are familiar with Philadelphia were familiar with the name of Callowhill. And she would bear 6 children. So Penn's continued persecution of the Anglican Church's doctrine led to a 7-month prison sentence in the Tower of London. And they said if he would recant, they would let him go, but he refused to. And he says, "My prison shall be my grave before I will budge a jot. I owe my conscience to no mortal man. And he did a lot of writing while he was in the tower, and he was ultimately he became imprisoned six times and wrote a lot during each time. These writings did not stop the persecution of the Quakers, but it did start in him a dream of a solution to what he called the Quaker problem and a new colony where the Quakers could live freely as a holy experiment. So one of the interesting experiences that William Penn had, considering that the Quakers were constantly being persecuted, was rather than backing down of his ideas, Penn promptly challenged the government, and he held a Quaker meeting on August 14th, 1670, and the Lord Mayor of London had him and his fellow Quakers arrested immediately. Now, the thing with this trial is that the jury acquitted him and all his defendants, but the Lord Mayor fined the entire jury, the jury now, threw them into prison. Now, the interesting thing is that the jury refused to change their verdict. And after 2 months, they were released through a writ of habeas corpus, following which the jury then sued the Lord Mayor of London on grounds of false arrest. And the whole the background is that Penn claimed that since the government refused to present a formal indictment, the jury could not reach a guilty verdict. So due to the intense religious persecution of Penn's Quakers in England, Penn and other prominent Quakers prepared to emigrate to America, and they were able to purchase West Jersey in 1677. And then again in 1682, they purchased East Jersey. So Penn petitioned King Charles for the land between Lord Baltimore's province of Maryland and the province of York. And the money that was owed to the Penn's family that the father had given to the king for the war, they gave him the land instead. Okay. Well, we're getting a little long here. Sorry.
You can just wrap it up.
Yeah. So one of the issues is that Penn did not spend a whole lot of time in Pennsylvania. And he spent a lot of his own money in regards to supporting the colony. When he went back to England, what he did most of the time was write about Quakerism. And he left a relative here to run Pennsylvania at the time. And they seemed to be doing pretty well on their own. And when he would come back, they were very upset with him because they considered him to be a micromanager. But he supported financially the colony. And it turns out that he pretty much bankrupt himself. And let me just do one more thing and then we'll turn it over because we're going too long. So Penn's second wife died in 1696, and his first wife died in 1694. His last years were filled with financial misfortune and included a term in debtor's prison. This poor man was in prison a lot. William Penn died on July 30th, 1718, in England, following a series of strokes. He is buried in a simple grave with no epitaph, but history has not forgotten his accomplishments.
So, this is a story about land, peoples, and an idea. The idea being Quakerism, the inner light, no ritual, as was covered in the first talk, although we will talk a little bit more about the inner light as we go along. So, the land is like the Delaware Valley as we know it today, southeastern Pennsylvania. Originally included Western New Jersey and also the three counties of Delaware, which separated themselves not fully until the Revolution. So Penn was a proprietor. He was given the land, as it were. I mean, there were plenty of people here already, the natives, of course. And the Swedes, the Dutch, and the Finns had all been here. And it is interesting that Penn, rightly so, is given a lot of credit for his good relations with the Native Americans. Well, they weren't, they didn't know they were Americans yet. They were the Lenni Lenape, is what they call themselves. And the word means literally original people. And they were an ancient tribe. They were called by other tribes the grandfathers. And they were very peaceable, generally speaking. I mean, they did have wars, but overall, they weren't as fierce as the other tribes. So the Swedes actually had very good relations before Penn. They were here in the 1630s and they were well established, but there were wars in Europe, and eventually the English did gain control of what we now know as Pennsylvania. Excuse me. So when Penn came here, it was a melting pot, or perhaps the word tossed salad would work better. There were language barriers. There were, of course, always interpreters. And Penn himself learned the language. He made an effort to learn the language. So he was here to plant a country. He came in 1682 for his first time. He was here twice. 1682 to 84 and 1699 to 1701. So a little less than 4 years, actually, altogether. So he believed that man is a better creature when he is free, and that freedom flourishes best in a diversified society. So Penn wanted to avoid what the Puritans did in New England. Of course, they were persecuted, but when they came here, they persecuted everybody else but the Puritans. The Quakers, as it were, they weren't called Quakers till they had been established for maybe 20 or 30 years. It was said that they quaked during their ceremony, so they, of course, used the name themselves today. But they are the Religious Society of France. So he believed that man is he believed in the goodness of man, not in man's inherent evil, like the Calvinists believed. It was a reaction against Calvinism. So when Penn met with the Indians, they were living a good life with dignity and freedom. And they explained to the English that well, they said that they said they came out of this ground, is the way they explained it. And they allowed other people to share their land and share their wealth, as it were. And as we stated, the prior groups, 50 years before Penn, they had pretty good relations overall. So now the natives didn't look at the land like the English did, as something to be bought and sold. The natives looked at the land as their mother, the sky, as father, and the sun as life giver and God. So it's a very common misnomer that the Indians sold the land. They did not believe that anyone could actually own the land. It was more as a rent or a tribute for the privilege to share the land in peace. And they expected gifts and tributes. So when Penn came here originally, he wanted to build his city in Chester, and he tried to negotiate with the Swedes, and the Swedes said, no way. So he moved up to what is now Philadelphia between two rivers, and actually was a much better location for his capital, for his seed of a nation, as he called it. So Penn's ship Welcome arrived in the New World in October of 1682. And Penn wrote a letter to the Indians stating, I desire to enjoy the land with your love and consent, that we may all always live together as neighbors and friends. And I have a great love and regard towards you, and I desire to win and gain your love and friendship by a kind, just, and peaceable life. Now, it is interesting that Voltaire called William Penn, he was a contemporary, the Age of Enlightenment is also called the Age of Voltaire. That's how much of an impact he had on that age. Voltaire said that Penn's treaty was the only treaty that was not sworn to and the only one that was not broken. Sadly, that changed with his sons, but that's another story. So William Penn was the founder of Quakerism in this country and its chief exponent, and very much in England. And he preached in England and Ireland, in the Netherlands, in Germany, several countries. He was quite an active man. It's interesting too, like when he really did become good friends with the Native Americans, Native Indians. He was quite the runner. It's said that he could outrun the braves. We don't know if that's apocryphal, if it's true or not, but he was quite the athlete. He participated in their powwows and their feasts. He welcomed them into his home. He visited there with his wife and his first wife and his children. So he really did make an effort. So Penn has been called a boundary spanner. He had to navigate between, it's funny, his father was an admiral, but William Penn did more navigating on land. He was, and he welcomed all groups. He welcomed all religions. He stayed true to his principles, and everybody could participate in government except for atheists. And you had to be a Christian, specifically a Christian, to be actively participate in government. But he did tolerate all groups, and the atheists couldn't hold office, but he didn't persecute them. He didn't turn them away. So it's Penn could be called the founder of religious tolerance, but he not only granted freedom of religion, he by extension granted freedom from religion. You didn't have to believe as him, and you didn't even have to believe at all. One of Penn's great quotes is, "Knowledge is treasure, but judgment is the treasurer of a wise man." So there were several frames of government. We won't go into them all. The fourth frame of government, the evolution was, at first, as Penn, as a proprietor and the founder of the colony, he very much was in control. And it was said earlier he was a bit of a micromanager, and he was. But the Quakers were free thinkers, and they immediately rebelled against some of his harsher restrictions. So there was a second frame of government, and then he left the colony to defend his property rights, as it were, against Lord Baltimore, the Calverts. So he had to go back to England, and he was there way longer than he wanted before he came back. In the meantime, a third frame of government by William Markham, his cousin and his agent, had made a more tolerant frame of government. And when he came back, and it was negotiated where actually Penn stepped away from active control of the colony, and the government was very, very well established. Now Penn said that government seems to me to be a part of religion itself, a thing sacred in its institutions and end. Very much a commonwealth. We call ourselves the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and that's where it stems from. It's interesting too that on the Liberty Bell it says to proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all of the inhabitants thereof. And we associate that with the Liberty Bell. It was actually cast, and the first time it was cast, it has a crack in it now, but the first time it was cast, that was commemorating 50 years of the Charter of Privileges, which could be said to be the basis of the Bill of Rights as well, and the Constitution of our country as we know it. All this was, and he got ideas from the Native Americans too, was they weren't all his ideas. But the Liberty Bell, the inscription on it, was actually the 50-year commemoration of the Charter of Privileges. So we want to leave time now for discussion. Yes, and well, yeah, we actually, this is very interesting.
Yeah.
We don't want to let this go. The first witch trial in America was actually presided over by William Penn right here in Philadelphia. And there were two women that were accused, and they were Swedish women that lived south of Philadelphia near Chester, on the banks of Ridley Creek, where it empties into the Delaware River. And of the two women accused, only one showed up for trial. And so it's also interesting that the trial ever occurred because there was no law against witchcraft on the books until the English forced it on the colony in 1718. So this is in 1684. And the trial transcripts still exist. It can be seen at the American Swedish Museum, which is down here where the stadiums are on Patterson Avenue. So in 1684, allegations of witchcraft were brought against a Swedish immigrant named Margaret Mattson. So according they so what sparked the allegations? A farmer, Henry Drystreet's cows were acting very strangely. It says that they ceased to produce milk, and for that, of course, is a problem for the farmer. Of course, the most logical explanation for the cow's milk drying up had to be witchcraft. So Mattson, along with another Swedish woman named Jeshro Hendrickson, had been rumored to have bewitched the livestock of their English neighbors, even before official charges were lodged against them. But unlike the infamous Salem witch trials, which would take place 8 years later, Penn refused to allow hysteria to take over, and which could result in chaos. He took calculated steps to ensure a fair trial for the accused, including providing Mattson with the translator and putting other Swedish immigrants on the jury. Mattson, of course, claimed she was not a witch, which was also testified to by her own, she was able to testify in her own defense, and that was very unusual at that time. While these common practices in modern day are court proceedings, it wasn't very common there. Now, this is very important and very interesting. The court eventually came to the following conclusion, and this was basically Penn's idea. They acknowledged that though Mattson had a reputation for being a witch, she was not guilty of the crimes of which she was accused. She was then granted her freedom provisionally for 6 months if she behaved, and there was a $50 bond that her husband put up that would also be returned. Penn turned out to be the real hero in the situation by letting his beliefs in fairness, equality, and tolerance guide his handling of the trial. It is possible that as a result, this was the only documented witch trial in the history of Pennsylvania. So he kind of put the kibosh on further trials. Okay, so yes, SL, question, comment?
It is very interesting that in the last 25 years of the 17th century, he establishes a holy experiment and politically calls it a commonwealth, in which there's more independent self-rule, individual self-determination, less reliance on authority and constitutions, more freedom of fairness and liberty. These same ideas appear 100 years later in the last 25 years of the 18th century in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. But even more interestingly, the basic ideas of a commonwealth, which made Pennsylvania different from any other colony at the time, are echoed in the Declaration of Independence. Independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, tolerance of dis the tolerance, avoidance of dissensions, and a unity based on the brotherhood of humanity. It's a very interesting line of influence and definitely shows that he's in that line of the theosophical movement.
Yes, indeed. And in the last 25 years of each century, it is said that a spiritual impulse comes forth. And this has been since the 14th century when Tsongkhapa gathered all the adepts together and they decided to provide this impulse. And we can trace it back through all the centuries. There's a hand here in Theosophy Hall.
Yes, the way that he handled that first witch trial is interesting to us because we've read that witches and other kind of esoteric-y people in Europe heard that Philadelphia truly had freedom of religion and came in search of that freedom of religion. And when it was determined that the local population would not have it, the esoteric and witchcraft and all. Yeah, there were no trials after that first one, but they were sent, they were made neighbors up in East Falls. That was created for them, East Falls. And isn't it interesting that East Falls is right there at the Wissahickon Creek? And the word Wissahickon in Old German means witchcraft.
Oh, very interesting. Yes, SL.
We're wondering if there's any comment on the chat.
Oh, we see something here.
Would you like me to?
Yes, we'll read it. Yes, of course. Oh yeah, here's the yes, William Penn was a slave owner. That's it was so common back then and unfortunate. His manor was built by that. Now the German Quakers were the first ones to protest slavery in 1695. And they were also the first group to abolish slavery within their ranks. People were shunned if they owned slaves. Pennsylvania, also the first colony, well, for, it was actually 1780, so it wasn't a colony anymore, to abolish slavery. So, yeah, that's all too common back then. And, yes, in the back.
Well, what we find interesting about this whole Quaker, the idea of this Quaker idea of all people, so to speak, are equal in the eyes of the divine, and that there's a light within which is equal among all. And this is still among us. The Quakers here in Philadelphia are still among us, and they still have their Quaker meeting houses and all. But what we find also interesting is that the United Lodge of Philadelphia, United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia was founded by a Quaker family. So they recognized they were in accord with the principles.
Yes, definitely. Theosophy is in accord with Quakerism and also Masonry, very much so. It's not exactly the same. There's, in a sense, there's less. It's not an organization. It's an association of students. So it's organized, but it's less. It's a little more open even than the ranks of those groups.
And the Penn actually, over the course of a number of years, was able to gather from England some of the more affluent Quakers, and it is said that he brought over in the course of time a huge amount. We forget how much. Many people he brought over, they were all Quakers. And Germantown,
Especially German, yeah.
yeah, Germantown especially had, I mean, didn't they?
Well, it was German Quakers and Mennonites and Brethren and various other groups from what we now know as Germany. And they Daniel Pastorius was their leader, and he was also behind the he was the mover and shaker and the writer behind the Quaker protest against
Against
slavery.
slavery,
Is
right?
there a comment in the back?
Yeah, it's that, you know, Germantown is the neighborhood second of Philadelphia right next to East Falls and the Wissahickon, which is why it was labeled that name in the German language.
Right. Yeah, we have a lot of Dutch names. Yes, go ahead, sir.
Well,
Yeah, we're ready. Go
different
ahead.
topic,
That's
but
fine.
you said that William Penn would allow any religion to be here and tolerated it, but I mean his treatment of atheists as not being able to be representatives of any people doesn't, in my mind, equal the concept of equality. So toleration does not equal equality. How did he treat the Jews, for example, or the Muslims? Or
I don't know if there are any Muslims here at the
yeah.
time. The Jews were integrated into society. I mean, it wasn't absolute toleration, but it was, in a sense, we could use, I guess we could say he tolerated, but he didn't accept. He didn't want them to infiltrate his government. So it was only for Christians as far as the government went. And actually, it was for male landowning Christians, period. But so he was way more tolerant than anybody else in Europe or America at the time that was in any position of power.
And to go along with that, I mean, people were coming here because they had heard of the way he was tolerant. And it wasn't a perfect society, but for the people that were coming over, it certainly was much, much better than what they were experiencing, especially for the Quakers in Anglican England at the time.
And there was phenomenal growth here. It soon became the largest city, surpassing Boston. New York was a very small place at the time. New York didn't surpass Philadelphia till the Erie Canal was built in the 1830s, which really opened up the whole country from Chicago to, you know, but there's a hand back here.
Yeah, let's face it. William Penn, as an insightful, wise man, was still no emperor. He could not dictate thoughts and minds of the people. He had to work with the consciousness of the time. And so just the fact that he could avoid the witch trials and have them as neighbors rather than integrated into the people, that speaks to him. Also, he was not absolutely, let me see. Philadelphia was not absolutely tolerant because, as far as the Catholics were concerned, yes, you could be Catholic here in Philadelphia, you could have a Catholic mass, but you were not allowed to publish where it is or when it was. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, well,
So, and then so for the atheists, for the consciousness of the time, it's easy to see among Quakers of the time that if an individual is an atheist, he is denying the very light in him and therefore the light in others. So why would they give him responsibility in their community? It's understandable that they wouldn't.
yeah, it was. I mean, there were raging religious wars in England and Europe at the time. And especially, well, most importantly, as far as Penn is concerned, the Anglican Church had been established by Henry VIII. Charles I was the head of the church. He was beheaded during this English Civil Wars, and Cromwell came in, and then there was a restoration with Charles II, and that's why his father was in such favor because he was a good friend with the two Charleses. James II came into power, a Roman Catholic. He was only in for 5 years. Penn was very good friends with James, and then James was forced out in the Glorious Revolution, and w William and Mary ruled. But it's true that Catholics had to be kind of underground at the time. That is true. Yes, go ahead, SL.
All this reminds us of a lesson that we can all take to heart, And that is, there's a difference between the theosophical movement, which is a movement of ideas and ideals, and any particular organization, group, or even individual who can but imperfectly manifest those ideals. So, as organizations, as people, we are evolving to be better able to express those ideals. So we can't judge ourselves too harshly, or those or others, but we certainly can tolerate their limitations and yet hold on to the ideas.
Yes, everything is an evolution, and we perhaps will look back on this era. Others will look back and say, how could they be so ignorant, so small? We don't know. It's an evolution. It was not, he was working with the tools at hand. And just say if he did promote, if he had promoted absolute tolerance, we don't know if people would, well, we don't, we can't say what the results would have been. But we do know people felt comfortable here, and even groups that later moved out, like the Pennsylvania Dutch, and other groups, the Scotch-Irish, they wanted the land, they wanted to get as far away as government as possible. They headed for the hills. And it's interesting that there's more Scotch-Irish presidents than any other background of the United States. So we're getting, go ahead, Mark.
So the what we find is interesting is that no matter what happened to him, Penn continued to fight. He did it in a peaceful way, and he presented his ideas. If people accepted it, fine. If not, they didn't have to. He never forced anybody to believe. And the fact that he was a, he publicized the whole thing about bringing all these people over from England to the colonies and what he was able to do and not be aggressive, we think is it really shows a lot on his character.
So we have that legacy here, and we truly Pennsylvania truly is a seed of a nation and an example for tolerance. So we just want to end with one quote because it is time. And this is there's many quotes by Penn, but it's on temper. Nothing does reason more right than the coolness of those that offer it. For truth often suffers more by the heat of its defenders than from the arguments of opposers. So calm begets calm. We wish you all a good day and hope you can join us on Friday and Wednesday.
Thank you.
Peace be, peace to all.